You're listening to On the Same Page, a podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library.
Welcome back to another episode of On the Same Page. We're your hosts. I'm Abby.
And I'm Katie.
We're librarians at the Central Library. On this episode, we hear a recording of an event at the Northside Library where a panel discusses starting a minority-owned business.
But before we get to that, we've got book chat.
All right, book chat. Katie, what did you read?
I just finished a new YA novel. It's by Laura Ruby, author of Bone Gap, which I think she's most well-known for. The title of her new one is called 13 Doorways, Wolves Behind Them All. It was just a finalist for the National Book Award for Young People's Literature.
Oh, great.
Did not win, but it made the finalist, which is pretty cool. So on the surface, it's a historical novel in that it takes place in World War II. Okay. And the main character is a girl named Frankie. She's the second of three children. They're living in Chicago, and her father is a shoemaker. He does something with shoes and finds himself falling on hard times and can't afford to raise his children anymore, so he takes them to an orphanage in Chicago. And that's where the story starts. And so it's about Frankie grew up in these awful circumstances. It's a Catholic orphanage, and so the nuns there are extremely strict and abusive. Mm-hmm. She gets her hair cut for punishment, and they're pretty strict on keeping the boys and girls separate in the orphanage. And so, of course, it's a YA novel, so there's a lot of romance. She meets another orphan boy. He's sent away to fight overseas along with her brother. So there's that going on. But because this is Laura Ruby, it's not just a straightforward historical novel, because we have the narrator watching Frankie growing up as a ghost. And so you don't really know. Yeah, so you don't know quite her story. And so as the Frankie's story evolves, you learn more about this ghost, what happened to her and why she's there. Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. It didn't quite fit together how I thought it would, but they kind of have parallel stories about women who are pretty rebellious and they go against what society expects of them. So it's interesting. I think if you like historical fiction, this will tick all those boxes, but it's a little like a kind of a neat spin.
Yeah, on a little traditional of that paranormal element.
Exactly.
Interesting. That sounds really fascinating. That ghost as a narrator kind of reminds me of death as a narrator in The Book Thief.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's similar to that.
Okay. I read Joyce Carol Oates' newest novel, Pursuit, which came out earlier this year. It's a really quick read, and as her books come out, I'm always like, am I gonna do it this time? Like, I know I appreciate her style and the stories that she tells, but it always feels like a real commitment. But this book was really fast, so I picked it up. And full disclosure, the real reason I picked it up is because the narrator's name is Abby, and it's just, I can't resist it when I see that, because it's not that common of a name for characters, so... just a little bit self-indulgent there.
We've all been there.
Yeah. So this is, like I said, this is a quick novel. It's a suspenseful story, and it starts with Abby walking in front of a bus the morning after she gets married. And from there, it's sort of two kind of intertwining narratives. One are stories from her past. I should say she survives walking in front of the bus. Okay. She's just in a coma.
I see.
Yeah. So it's kind of her memories from the past and her brand new husband kind of trying to figure out whether or not it was an accident or if instead it was an intentional move to walk in front of the bus. There is some domestic violence depicted in this book. So for readers who don't want to touch on that content, I would avoid it. I think that often some sort of violence, will come up in her books, but that was definitely a big theme in this one. But yeah, it stands up to her whole catalog. I'd recommend it if you're looking for a quick suspense book.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Next, we hear a recording of an event that took place at the Northside Library in November. In it, an expert panel discusses existing and emerging resources to help build the foundation and the relationships that make a business a success. All of this with a focus on starting a minority-owned business.
The panelists include Quentin Harrell, the founder and CEO of Heritage United Builders and co-owner of A Taste of Home Southern Cuisine Food Truck, Holly Lee from the City of Charlottesville's Minority Business Program and Economic Development, Stephen Davis from the Community Investment Collaborative, Yolanda Harrell from New Hill Development Corporation, and Zoe Smith, also from the City of Charlottesville's Minority Business Program and Economic Development Department.
First of all, I just want to thank you all so much for coming out tonight. Like Mr. Harrell said, I came across a Steve article, I think it must have been last year sometime. I saw he'd done a similar program like this in the community, and I thought, you know, let's bring that to Northside Library, and this is great attendance. So thank you all for coming out. I also want to thank all the panelists for coming out, too, and taking the time this evening to share their expertise with us. We really appreciate it. Let's see. Also, one other thing I want to mention, if there's anybody who couldn't make this program tonight, that you know, we are recording it for our podcast. It's an audio recording, so you can listen to it all again if you missed something, if you get a chance to jot something down. Sometimes there's a little bit of backlog, so it might not actually go live for perhaps a few weeks or so, but just keep an eye out. It's available on jmrl.org. So I'm going to introduce again, if that's okay, because I worked hard on this. founder and CEO of Heritage United Builders and co-owner of A Taste of Home Southern Cuisine Food Truck, Quentin Harrell was named one of the Daily Progress's Distinguished Dozen in 2016 for his outstanding work in the community. His tireless efforts and advocacy of African-American and minority business ventures and his commitment to economic empowerment and social justice make him a vital local resource and an absolute inspiration for aspiring minority business owners, which is why I wanted you to come this evening. So I'm so grateful that he has agreed to arrange and moderate this evening's program. We are so happy to have him here and ask you to please kindly help me welcome him for a second time.
So, yeah, 14 years in Charlottesville of owning a retail clothing store called Charlottesville Players. After that, an environmentally friendly dry cleaning service. We did that from 2008 to 2011. We grew too fast, and we were working 14-hour days, 7 days a week at one point. And then we got smart and backed it down to 6 days a week, 14 hours a day. So hated that. finally went back to school and got a business degree, a bachelor's in business from Averett University, and worked part-time, ran the business, went to school. So and that point to all of you all is never doubt that you can, when you have a goal set in mind, you can do anything for X amount of time, as long as you got a schedule set. You can do anything, all right? So started working at Region 10 after I graduated. Worked in procurement, purchasing for the organization. Moved to business office management after 5 years of that. And just recently resigned after 7 years. From Region 10, yeah. Yeah, I can give it up for that. Yeah. It was a long thought process of praying and planning and scheduling with my wife to take the leap back into the private sector. You know, it's a big issue because you got to think about insurance and giving that up and how the next, one guy told me, it's back to eat what you kill. So that's back where I am now, and I'm excited. So my wife and I, we own a food truck and a catering company, and just recently, last year, started a company called Heritage United Builders, where it's essentially a construction brokerage company, where I connect African-American and minority contractors to construction work. So I just wanted to give you all that, not to draw all the air out of the room for our illustrious panel, but I just wanted to give you all some background to let you know that we serious about business up here, you know, and I'm very, very passionate about it. So Some of I asked some of my panelists to send me a bio, and I was going to share it. But what I decided that I would do, I'm going to introduce each panelist with a question and ask each of them to share this information to you. And we're just going to really jump into it. I have some questions to ask them, but depending on this room, hopefully you guys look like an enthusiastic, inquisitive bunch. So we want you guys to ask as many questions as you can, because you look like you look curious, and you look ready. So that's the simple agenda for tonight, for you all to ask questions. And if you get scared, I got some questions to ask. If you get shy, I'll fill in. But that's how the panel is going to go tonight. So first and foremost, we'll start to the good dynamic duo to my right and to your left, Holly Lee and Zoe Smith. And this question is for the entire panel. It's essentially, tell us about your organization's mission, its services, and how you got involved.
So I'm trying to remember why I sat in the first seat. Because I have to answer the first question. No, so again, my name is Holly Lee. I'm with the City of Charlottesville Office of Economic Development, and I have been there for almost 12 years now. It'll be 12 years in December, which is coming up really fast. But basically, the Office of Economic Development, we serve as a catalyst for public and private initiatives that will create workforce opportunities in the Charlottesville community. And so basically that's done in a set of ways. So one of the biggest parts, of course, is capital development, so large development of big business in Charlottesville. Of course, we're only 10 square miles, completely landlocked by Albemarle County, so there's not so much that we can do there, but we have been building up. There has been some of that going on. And with that comes workforce development. So the more private sector businesses we have in the community, the more people who are needed to work. And so as part of that workforce initiative, we have the city's downtown job center, which is located in the lower level of Jefferson Madison Regional Library. And we offer employment services, and we have training programs, and we have various programs to help people who want to get good jobs in the area get the training and skills that they need in order to do so. We also have business development initiatives where we're focusing on startups, entrepreneurs who are thinking about, you know, starting something up, existing businesses. And one of our newest relaunched programs that we're super proud to have is called the Minority Business Program. And it is focused on minority and women-owned businesses in the Charlottesville area. And we have lots of various programs. And Zoe Smith, who's with me today as part of the dynamic duo here, she is the coordinator for that program. And so I'll let her get into some of the details on that.
Gave out most of the So as Holly said, my name is Zoe Smith. I've been with economic development for over 2 years in this particular role for 6 months. So I started in July. So the Minority Business Program was created to promote small women and minority-owned businesses in the city. So we try to develop small businesses as well as expand and grow existing businesses. Some of the services that we offer, if you come to my office, we can do one-on-one business consultations. We have workshops and quarterly events for networking. We have workshops for minority businesses to just get skills that they need. And there are also some training programs in the pipeline. But our mission is really just to increase the minority businesses that are doing business with the city. So we do that with a lot of procurement with the city. So I help people become registered vendors with the city so they can do business. And we also introduce them to centralized buyers in the city so they know that their services are there for them.
Hi, my name is Yolanda Harrell, and I'm the other half of Team Harrell over here. I am with New Hill Development Corporation. We are a community development corporation that was established with the sole purpose to help create more economic opportunity for the African American community of Charlottesville and Greater Charlottesville, to create more economic mobility. And we focus on three things. We focus on financial empowerment, how do we gain more access to capital resources, how do we make sure we have the right credit necessary to be able to enjoy some of those capital resources at a cheaper price. How do we also utilize our credit scores to be able to gain access to other things like the choice in housing that we want to have? The second thing that we focus on is economic development in terms of how do we create more African-American-owned businesses, public-facing businesses as well as businesses that are not, because that helps to change the social fabric of our community so that when people look into the community of Charlottesville, they see themselves reflected back. And that will go very, very far, not only to encouraging those that live here currently, that this is a community that can be shared by all, but also that goes a long way to encourage individuals that move into our community to feel like that this is a community that has representation of them here so that they can stay and want to grow their businesses or seek other opportunities here. And then the last thing that we focus on is housing. And for us, we really lean hard towards affordable home ownership. We know that everybody's not in a position and ready to own right now, but how do we help make sure that they at least have that as an attainable goal, not something that is so unattainable because the pricing is so high that that they can't dare to even dream that that's a possibility. So that's what we focus on at New Hill Development Corporation.
Good evening. Excuse me. Good evening. My name is Stephen Davis. I'm with the Community Investment Collaborative, or CIC. I'll tell you just a little bit about CIC, but first I'll tell you how I got involved, which relates a lot to kind of the core of who we are. So 2011 into 2012, or in 2012, my wife and I bought our first home. As you know, y'all mentioned, home ownership is a definitely a worthy goal as you're trying to build your own financial assets. And when we, leading up to buying our own home, we realized years before we'd probably lived a little bit beyond our means for a little while and needed to play a little catch up before we could be in the position to buy our home. And once we caught up and got a little bit ahead, everything got easier. Not that it wasn't easy, but it just got easier. You had better credit, less debt means that you paid lower interest rates on things. You could get opportunities to do other things. You could get a loan for a home. Even interest rate on buying a car was less. All of those things, life was easier because we weren't behind. And for me, that is really what the core of CIC does. Our mission is helping under-resourced entrepreneurs start and grow small businesses. And a big part of that is helping you get just a little bit ahead in the business or in life so that you have more opportunities and the decisions you make with more opportunities and more options, you're going to make better decisions because you have more things available to you. So CIC's core program is built on four pillars: education, mentoring, microlending, and networking. So the way that most folks start working with us is a 16-week entrepreneur workshop. It's designed to do two things. One, help you determine if the business you have or that the business that you want to start can be viable. And viability means different things to different people, but each of you, like we could all talk about pick one business and go around the room and everybody look at the same set of financials and numbers and type of business, and we all make a different decision about whether it was worth it to you. Because we all look at things differently, we have different goals, different values, different points in our life. And so the workshop and helping you figure out if a business that you want to start or grow is viable is about your goals, and then how do you figure that out? How do you learn how to do a break-even analysis for your business? How do you learn who your target customers should be? How do you learn how to evaluate competitors and where you think you can be better or not? So that's kind of the first 8 weeks. It meets once a week for 8 weeks. The workshop's actually going on right now downtown. We're in week 14 of 16 right now. The second 8 weeks is about learning the basics of running a business, marketing and cash flow, sales, hiring, legal issues. You learn the basics on all of those things over the 16 weeks. There are about 30 entrepreneurs in a cohort. You're in small groups of about 8, and you work with each other to learn the basics, to get feedback on the plan you're working on, and kind of more fully develop your business. One of the core parts of the workshop is you learn just as much from others as you do from the staff and volunteers, the experts, so to speak, because everybody in this room brings something of value to the table. You know, whether you're in business or not, you have skills and life experiences that really make it that can really help anyone in starting a business. And so you can help someone else can help you in addition to the staff and volunteers. So it's a 16-week program. We run it twice a year. Applications are due in December and June for the classes that start in February and August. I'll repeat that later for you. After you've been through our workshop, we have a mentor program. We pair folks with volunteers who work with you one-on-one as you take next steps. We offer microloans of up to $35,000. Banks don't lend a lot to new businesses. So if you haven't been in business 2 years, it's hard to get a traditional bank loan. You might be able to, if you have own a home, you might be able to leverage equity in your house, but that's not a business loan. That's just a personal loan using your equity. And it's one of the reasons to own a house, but it's also a risk you're taking because it's where you live, right? But we will do loans to businesses under 2 years old. We look at your credit and we help you think about your credit, but we won't automatically disqualify anyone because of, you know, a low credit score. Banks in general don't lend if you don't have a 650 credit score. So that's the loans. I can answer more questions about that as we go. And the last pillar is networking. And if you haven't thought about this already, you should. Who's in your network? Who do you know? Who do you need to know for your business to be successful? And our program is built around how do we help you make those connections, both on building relationships, but also what markets are you selling to? Do you want to sell to the city? In which case, I think these two ladies could help you out a lot. Or sell to UVA or to the state. All of those things are as part of that. So that's a little bit about CIC.
Thank you, panelists. And what I'll say about CIC, welcome, sir, welcome. And what I'll say about CIC, we mentioned that Team Harrell owns a food truck and a catering company. We came through CIC. And so we know that it works. You know, we are alumni. Yeah, we're alumni of CIC. So it works. It's a resource. Powerful. I think you all should consider it and take advantage of it. How many of you all are aspiring entrepreneurs? You have an idea, but you haven't started yet. By a show of hands. All right. Oh, you don't have to be shy. All right. And then how many of you already have an existing business and just want to learn about resources and growing? Okay. All right. Cool. So it's about 50-50 or 60-40 in the room. Well, that's good. That's a good mix. I'm going to ask another question of the panel, but I really want you guys to really start putting your thinking cap on after this answer, because I want to hear from you all. The next question to the panel is, and if you don't want to share, you can just pass the mic. But in your opinion, what's so important about starting a business? Like, what do you think is important about business, starting a business? And if you think of something, what is the biggest misconception that people have about starting a business?
So, like Quentin, at an early age, I come from an entrepreneurial background as well. So it's been ingrained in me since I was, you know, dipping ice cream at our family's restaurant at age 8. So, you know, it's one of those things. And now my father he's a serial entrepreneur as well. So we've had multiple businesses throughout the years that I've been able to participate in. And I think the thing about owning your own business is that it is your own business and nobody will treat it the way you do. It's one thing to, you know, go to work every day for somebody else. It's another thing to go to work every day for yourself. And being able to make decisions about your future. I think one of the biggest misconceptions about starting your own business, and this is what I've seen over the, you know, years that I've been at the city, is the fact that people think that they have to jump all in at the beginning. So I need to go out and sign a lease tomorrow with a rent of $3,000 a month. No, that's not necessary. So what I always try to get people to do is think about your idea and how can we get it off the ground at a smaller scale maybe you're working a full-time job, and so how can we get it off the ground at a smaller scale and then see how it goes and try out some stuff and some of the ideas that you have and then scale it up to the point that you can retire from Region 10, right, and go full scale at your own business. So, I mean, I guess that would be the thing I'd say is, like, it's not like you can start a business tomorrow if you really want to do it, right? It's something that you can do, but it's just what level are you starting at? So so that's what I'd say.
I didn't go to school for business. I actually went to school. I majored in psychology, and I minored in criminal justice and sociology. But when I was hired with the city, Holly gave me a crash course on Business 101, and it was a lot less than I was expecting. It really wasn't that complicated, and even in the 6 months, I'm still learning about, you know, business ownership. But the people that come to me that have a business idea, I just give them, like, that little crash course of, it's really not that difficult. Just do X, Y, and Z to get your feet wet and then move on from there. And to piggyback off what Holly said, having small, attainable goals. So I've worked with businesses in these 6 months that have these high, attainable goals, and when they fail, they beat themselves up about it. But if they had a smaller goal that's more achievable, they can build their confidence in their business.
I'm going to read the question again. Sorry, I'm at a certain age. I think what's important about owning your own business, to build up what Holly said, you own it. It's yours. And you have an opportunity to treat that business as a revenue stream. For me, I've always looked at work and business as a way to finance my life, the life I want to live. So I have my life goals, and then I figure out a way to finance those life goals. And so for me, owning a business is one of those ways of financing some of the life goals that we share. I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that because you knew how to do something when you were working for someone else, means you can start a business doing that same thing and be very successful at it. So one of my favorite books that I tell people all the time that they should always read, any entrepreneur, is The Entrepreneurial Myth by Michael Gerber. It is a great book, and it talks about, you know, the three people you need to be in a business. And oftentimes what folks are in the business is the technician. They were doing something for another company or something that they learned how to do in their life, and they were really good at that, or, you know, they worked for this company and they thought, I can do this. I can start my own business and I can do this thing. But what they did not realize is that they were never the manager. So they don't understand the management piece of the business, and they were never the innovator. They don't have the vision. So yes, they know how to do the technical piece, but all of these things are required in order to be able to have a successful business. And without all of those components, just one of those components does not allow you to achieve the level of success that you want to achieve in your business. It does require you to have all of those components to it. And so I think that's one of the largest misconceptions, that because I could do it working for someone else, that I can do it successfully for my...
They took all my answers. important about starting a business, I think it's... who here likes getting a paycheck? Not everyone raised their hand, when you work for someone, within reason, you know, unless their business isn't doing well, you get paid on a set schedule, right? You usually know what you're going to get paid. You might work more or less hours if you're hourly, but you generally have a sense of what you're going to get paid. You give that up for the potential for more freedom or to make more. And so that's the reason you own the business, because you want either more freedom because you're the owner, although that freedom sometimes is relative, right? You get the choice, but not necessarily, you know, you might work 14 hours a week, 7 days a week, 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. But then you get the reward if you can do it better than other businesses. So that's the reason if you want to take that risk, but it is a risk. And so all the other things I said are true, but that's the one thing to remember. One, there's many misconceptions about business, but one of the things I see most often, especially if you've been doing what you want to do in your business for someone else, you think you can go out and do it, and you think you're going to be able to actually deliver something for a better price. Very few businesses that operate, that are small businesses, can actually compete on price. You're going to have to charge just as much as your current employer, or maybe even more, to be successful in your business. So you're going to have to charge more, which means you're going to have to do it better in some way. That way could be that you know your customers and they know you and they want to support you. It could be that you're from their neighborhood or their community and they want to support you there. Or it could be that you deliver more value in the product. And that's often the best thing to do, is can you do the job better or deliver a better product? Because you're probably going to have to charge as much, if not more, because very few of us in here are ever going to compete against the Targets or the Walmarts or the big grocery stores or the big chain restaurants. They all have everything down to a science. They're going to be able to outdo us on price. You have to find the thing that you offer that's more value, because for your business successful, you're going to have to charge more.
Excellent points. Excellent points.
Any questions? Anybody have any thoughts at this point? Value. That's a very, very important point about business. When I went back to business school, that was one of the main things that stuck with me, is as an entrepreneur, thinking about how do you create value? That's a very important piece. How do you create something that your customer looks at what you've created, whether it's a product or service, and say, hey, I'm willing to pay this amount of money for it because I feel like I'm gaining more from it. Could be the same product, but the service behind it, the feeling that you get from it, the interaction in that business model, the process, how is it made easier, where you feel great about making this purchase from this company as opposed to that company? Value is a very important piece. Yes, ma'am.
Question. So I'm one of the people who have like an idea every week. Like I joke on the Get Rich Quick team, right? I'm not particularly committed to it. I can talk myself out of it as quickly as I talk myself into it. But I'm interested in starting something as a form of supplemental income, but I'm thinking out, like, from the businesses you all have worked with and when they're successful, have you seen them have a better start or be more viable because they're in it for supplemental income, or they're in it for, like, a passion? Like, I don't care how much I make, I just want to do this thing. Or the combination of what's the best start?
You're hitting right on what I said earlier. What are your goals for doing it? If it's just supplemental income, you don't. If you can do it small and just supplement your income, how much is worth your time, right? And it's that can be done a lot easier than making enough money to give up the day job, right? So your goals are different there and knowing it. I don't know. There's not one that works better or worse. Every individual is different. And so what works for you is the most important thing to think about. But heading back to Quentin's point, and I think it relates to yours, is whatever you're selling, it needs to be. How you create value is by solving a problem for someone. You know, you're not selling a product or service, you're solving a solution to someone's problem. Make sure you really know what problem you're solving. You know, is it, you know, a convenient place to get something to eat? Is it we served a number of hair salons through CIC, and two people can be starting a hair salon that serve the same community, the same demographic, and could be offering very different services. One is a convenient place to get your hair done, and another place is, this is the words of one of the entrepreneurs who went through our program, her target client was the old church ladies. They came together every week, got their hair done in a group, and gossiped. That was who she wanted to serve, and the problem she was solving was creating a community and a place where they could get together and do it every week while getting their hair cut. And that's different than just being able to walk in without an appointment. So that gets to your point and your question of part-time, full-time, what works better. It really depends on you and what type of business you're working in.
I think also it depends on whether or not you want a business or are you an entrepreneur. Because an entrepreneur can start any business. They don't have to be, you know, emotionally invested in it. They can just look at it as purely, here's a problem, here's a solution, here's how I can make money off of that, off of solving that problem. And so I think it really comes down to what Stephen has said, you know, what is it that you want to do? Because that's going to matter. You know, for some people, it has to be this thing. You know, this is the thing I've always wanted to do. This is what I'm passionate about. And that's what drives them and motivates them. And that's great. You know, and so you just got to get all the pieces that are associated with that in order to make that successful. For others, it's not necessarily about that. It's about, you know, I want to be able to create income for myself. Like I said, for me, revenue streams, how do I finance my life? I got life goals, I got living life goals, and then I've got financial goals. And so for me, how I am an entrepreneur, I'm not married to any one concept. I am married, however, to how do we make sure that my husband and our life that we have together is financially stable, solvent, and that we are no longer having to physically labor for every dollar that comes into our house? How do we create those income streams where money is coming in, and if we decide that we just want to take off, then we can just do that. So it really becomes about what you want to do and how you go about preparing yourself to be able to do just that. And that really is going to matter a lot as well. I would say currently, if you are working for someone else, one of the things that I highly encourage anyone to do is use your job as a training ground. Take advantage of every single opportunity that your employer gives you to be able to learn how to run a business. Why pay for it when you can get paid and learn at the same time? You know, so I feel like that's just an opportunity that a lot of us miss when we're in the working world. We don't really see all the opportunities that exist within our job that prepares us for when we're ready to own our own business that we could have learned and gotten paid for learning.
I would say that I don't think it ever hurts to start a business that you enjoy. I mean, I think it's one thing for a person to be, you know, serial in the terms that it's one business after the other and they're never truly passionate about it in any particular way, but it's a way to generate revenue and make income. But if you're doing something, this is just like in any facet of your life, you know, if you work a full-time job or if you own your own business or if you start your own business, ideally we'd be doing something that we enjoy, because when we're doing that, we're putting our full self into that, and therefore more than likely it will be more successful. And it might ultimately be the thing that you want to leave the full-time job for and do full-time, you know. But I tell people, if it's not something that you really love, are you really going to put your full heart into it? Because when you own a business, you live, you sleep, you eat, you breathe that business. And, well, a lot of nights you don't sleep, but, you know, because you're up all night thinking about what's the next way, you know, next thing I'm going to do to make this work. But, if it's something that you're not passionate about and you don't enjoy it, you're not ever going to put that level of commitment into it. So.
Great, great insight. Thanks for the question as well. I was just thinking as they were talking, there are different types of business pursuits as well. You can be an entrepreneur you can be a business owner and just run a mom and pop shop and be happy in running a mom and pop shop. Or you pursue that passion that you've always loved and you do what you love. But there's also entrepreneurs that are thinking about having multiple businesses, scaling up their organization. Anybody heard of the term scaling? So some people want to start off with an idea, and after they perfect that idea, do it 15 more times or 20 more times. Have you all thought about how you want to go about that? Because the panel just mentioned, I heard someone mention about goals. And it's very important because entrepreneurialism can be very, very rewarding. But if you don't have set goals when you step into it, you can work yourself to death. Or you can get in a place where you're just working in your business and not working on your business. So setting goals is very important. that's something that I would like you guys to think about. Any questions? All right, I got another question. Oh, and I was going to save this point till later. I got another question for y'all. But hold on.
Well, and also, can I just make a comment to what Denise said?
Sure.
And even if scaling is not your thing, mm-hmm. to Quentin's point, even if it's mom and pop, that's why goals are so important. It's all about what are you trying to do? What do you ultimately want to do in terms of your life? Because entrepreneurial life is a hard life, mm-hmm. but it can be an extremely rewarding life. So you have to really understand what it is that you want to do. And so if you're wanting to scale, then you have to think about things like, where am I going to get that talent from? And who am I going to trust with my baby? Because, regardless of whether it's your life's passion or not, at the end of the day, you put your blood, your sweat, your tears into it to get it off the ground. And now you've got to trust that other people are going to come in and they're going to have the same level of commitment to running your business so that you can get to the business and working on your business. And so there's a lot that you have to think about when it comes to how do you do that? Because, if you want to just work in it, that's nothing wrong with that. Own your own job. Absolutely. Totally for it. At the end of the day, what is it that you ultimately want to do? How does it benefit your life?
Yes, ma'am.
I have another question. I'm like, how to get the support to do the things behind the scenes that you either can't do or you really don't
work? Or, can you all hear back there?
Or when you think about, if, that's not going to make me the money, I should be out doing what's going to make me the money and then have someone else doing, the website and things like that. Or I can do that, but by the time I take 4 hours to figure out something that somebody could have done in 20 minutes because I'm too cheap to pay someone, it's like I could have been, So that's what I'm struggling with the most is either how to barter, and so I sell not a service and it's kind of like you kind of have to need what I offer, so that's just run of the mills. So that has been the biggest frustration for me is trying to do things myself instead of paying someone else to do it. And then when I try to get folks that are still learning, you want to give somebody an opportunity and you pay them a little bit and say, hey, you can put this on your resume, they don't show it, or they do halfway. And I'm like, I could have done that. So that's where my biggest thing is.
Any comments on it?
Well, I guess my question for you is the reason that you're not outsourcing the things that you're not strong at, are you doing that because of budget issues or because you don't trust other people to do it? Is it more budget?
It's two things, budget and not organized.
Okay.
Because, I have it in my brain, and then by the time I try to figure out exactly what it is, it's like, forget it.
So
it's like, just give me what you got, and then I'll tell you what I like it about.
So I guess my thing there would be there are certain pieces that are essential to your business, one of those being a website, right, and being ways to market your service. Like you said, you have services that people will seek out, and how are they going to know about those things if that's not there? If that's not your strong suit, I would think that would be something that I would outsource, because that you not outsourcing that is hindering you from generating revenue, right? And so, I wouldn't hold on to anything that important for too long. I would definitely try to find the funding to put that together.
To me, I think that's where CIC comes in handy, because you've got 16 weeks to think about all these little pieces and then getting, which helps you organize yourself. That's what I used CIC for, mm-hmm. is to help organize my thoughts, because I had a lot up here, but nothing really on paper. And that time, that dedicated time, was it 4 hours or 3 hours?
The workshop is 3 hours, yeah.
So the 3 hours that you spend, plus the time that you're doing your homework before that, preparing, you're forcing yourself to dedicate time to getting prepared and thinking through all these aspects of your business, which I think is extremely important. And then to Holly's point, then you can decide, okay, what do I want to do and what I want someone else to do? What, you know, what's my strong suits? What am I not really great at and what I not really want to do? And then you can create a budget around that, because when you're looking to start up, what's my startup budget going to be? How do I need it? What is it going to cost me to get all these things? And one of the wonderful things about going through their program is that you may meet people in that class that is doing the very thing that you absolutely do not want to do in your business. And so now you have someone that you could potentially partner with in doing some of those things.
And I'll just add, just about any business challenge that you have, and a lot of them deal with operations or figuring out who should do what or outsourcing. You know, if it's about budget, the way to solve it is to sell more.
Yep.
You know, and the more you can focus on getting out there and just selling more, go hustle, sell a little bit more, and then buy the website.
Yep.
Hustle, sell a little bit more, and pay the accountant. You know, focus, the more you can focus on just continuing to sell.
I have a website up. No. I just need somebody else to maintain. Somebody else to maintain.
But I mean, that takes time every month. Yeah. So, how many sales do you need to do just to pay that person each month? And it depends. Like, some products, you know, is $100, some products are $5. So that can vary greatly. But, you know, most things are solved by selling more, because then you have flexibility to make decisions on how you spend your time, because you could actually hire someone.
I was going to say, just in my experience, you know, with different businesses I've dabbled with, it's very difficult to go from, and I think it's a common theme, right, to go from yourself, particularly to something unique, to maybe creating a team. And then you run into that, like you said, sell more, but I've had situations where if somebody came at me with $1 million worth of business, I wouldn't have the people or anything else to actually, like on paper it sounds good up front, but you don't want to fail. You talked about I remember your dry cleaner, right? You guys didn't fail, but you said you had a lot of business coming in. And after a while, it's almost, if you can't, because I think a lot of people that are A-type business owners want to do well, right? You want to do a good job. So there's also that point where, you can sell more and more can come your way, but you want to be able to deliver a good product. And that's such a weird balance when you're getting started. To be able to take on all that, but then find the people, get them trained, trust them. If it's a unique field that you're in, there may not be anybody easily available on a part-time basis that can do what you can do. Of course, the CIC, I'm sure, helps you solve all that stuff, but I think those are some of the things that every entrepreneur runs into, is how do you go from yourself to 3 other people or 10 other people, you know.
It's easier to slow down sales than it is to speed up sales. Sure. You know, you can... It's hard to get to sell more, but when it starts to pick up, you can always throttle back a little bit so you can catch up and get your operations in place and invest in it. And that's tough to do as well. All of those things are incredibly hard. But why are they hard? Because they involve humans and interacting with humans and managing humans, right? Like all of us here, and that's hard to build when you're hiring people. But it is the more often than not, people sometimes focus on building those things, and they don't focus on selling, and they're wondering why isn't it happening? So figure out what people want and go sell it, and then you can get faster and faster with it. And if you see it growing, it's always better to be just a little bit behind there than it is to be significantly ahead of what you're actually selling. That none of it makes it easy. There's no perfect way to line that up. You know, anyone who's done business in here, you know, including, you know, like we'll say, there's no perfect way to align that. And trust me. And also, all of us feel that, like, if I'm going to do it, I want, like you just said, I want to deliver quality.
Right.
And because I know if I sell something I don't deliver, it makes it hard to sell again. Right? We all feel that. So you kind of have to plan for something. At some point, that's a little bit of what CIC tries to address. And I know New Hill, we've been talking a lot about, is how do you kind of grow faster and get it? And that's where financing comes in. When you're selling, it's easier to get a loan from someone or to get an investor, because the investor or any lender, CIC included, or even a bank, wants to see that people are buying what you're selling. And so the more you can prove that you can do it, then it makes it easier to say, all right, well, I need a couple of employees so I can borrow $35,000 to get me through the next 3 months and then sell it, you know, over the next couple of years to pay it back, and then I'm off and running.
I think also to add on to that, it's okay to collaborate. Maybe depending on whatever your business is, let's just call it a painting business, right? You may be a one person, one operation painting company right now, and then you get an opportunity to do a much bigger job than, say, you can handle by yourself. But you know another guy that has a painting company. So you could go in on that deal together as you're building up your capital, so that you're not taking on too much initially. I think sometimes we feel like that we have to do it all by ourselves, and so we don't necessarily think about how can we partner up and tackle something together, and everybody makes some money off of the deal. Yeah, maybe less money than what we were wanting to make off of getting that job, but what we did get is we got experience, we got a new relationship if we didn't already have it, and we got something that we can now put on our resume for the next opportunity that we can now sell to someone else and say, hey, this is what I was able to accomplish in partnership with, you know, this other company over here. So there's, you know, there's always some ways to do that, but infrastructure is something that, and again, that book I mentioned to you, it gets into that a lot, that oftentimes we as entrepreneurs can kind of rush a little bit, and so sometimes partnership is the way you can get your infrastructure built up a little bit.
A couple of important points I want to share with the discussion right now. I think my wife alluded to it, but the importance of understanding sales and you building up your skill set in sales is very important. There are programs, there's trainings where people really invest a lot of time in sales. Not suggesting that you have to take that time before you start a business to find that training, but you really need to look at sales. There's sales, you're selling yourself all the time. Even if it's not your business, it's all about convincing someone that I have value here. So we all are selling in some sort of relational transaction that we always. So you really need to consider sales as you move forward in your entrepreneurial pathway. The second point is systems. When you're starting your business, you have to be thinking about sales, but also thinking about how do you create a smoother process so that you save yourself time and you can get more done in a lesser amount of time. Because the market essentially it blesses those who find out more efficient ways to bring a service to market. It benefits and blesses those who come up with a easier way to get things done. It's just how it works. And those who don't are those who get penalized by the market. So always thinking about systems. And then the last point, because based on what you mentioned earlier and what this discussion has been talking about with, you know, just doing everything yourself and working in and not on. Please consider, I was going to wait until the end to give you guys this nugget, but John C. Maxwell, there's a book called Leadership 101. Please make note of that book and get it if you can. Very.
We're at the library, sir.
So. Duh. Yeah, I ain't want to put Evan on blast if he ain't have it in here. You know what I'm saying? But Leadership 101. Leadership is, I learned very late in the game how important leadership is in your business model. Because if you don't improve your leadership skills, you'll never be able to build a team. Leadership is about, actually, would you guys be willing to share your insights about leadership and how it helps in business?
We've just been that talking. Simple? That's just that simple question, Hill?
I just flipped that on, and I flipped the script. But I wanted to hear from, if anyone had a point about that, just if you could share.
Okay, so the importance of leadership?
The importance of leadership in business success.
I think leadership is one of the most critical aspects of success in business and just in daily life. Being authentic in that leadership, so not just like, hey, I'm the boss, look at me, you know, or I'm the boss and I'm going to tell you what to do. It's being, you know, authentic and wanting the best for your business, for your team, for your customers, for, you know, whoever you're serving. And, you know, I've had the opportunity over the years through the city of Charlottesville to, you know, take advantage of a lot of leadership training. It's something that I'm personally just very interested in because you can really see the difference between a business that has a leader, a manager, and a not-so-good leader or manager. So I think being a good leader is what will take you to the next level compared to just, you know, somebody who's managing the day-to-day operations, you know, working in the business as opposed to leading it and leading the team to higher levels of success. So that's my thought on that. And Zoe, you can say something about leadership since we work together. Just don't say anything mean about me.
Well, as Holly said, leadership is very important. I'm actually in a class now called Leadership Charlottesville, and I've had been presented with situations that I've never experienced in my adult life. And I think being able to be polite and, you know, just using like common courtesy, like we're human beings, we have feelings, and but not being able to like tiptoe and dance around people's feelings, but knowing that I need to get the job done. And if I have to say something to you that you're not going to like, then I need to say it. And I think it plays an important role in business ownership, because if someone's going to, you know, do something that you don't think is right, or they think that they can, you know, take the wheel, I think you need to be, you know, big enough to say, no, that's not how I want it. I want it this way, and, you know, be firm in that standing.
I think to add to what these ladies have already spoken to, one of the leadership is without a doubt probably one of the number one things that could allow business to be very successful or to not really go anywhere. And I'm a firm believer that leadership has nothing to do with titles. It has everything to do with a state of mind and who you are. I believe in being a servant leader, that if you, Zig Ziglar is one of my favorite motivational speakers, and one of his sayings is that you will always get what you want when you help just enough other people get what they want. And I truly believe that that is critical when you are working with a team within your business, that if you're supporting, if you understand what are their goals, what are your team members' goals, then, and you're helping them get reach their goals, then they're certainly going to be innovative and help you reach your goal as well. And you know, one of the things that Zoe mentioned is that, you know, sometimes you have to have those difficult conversations with individuals. One of the things I think that a good leader does is they understand what are they not good at, and they hire people that are good at that.
Exactly.
But also that everybody shouldn't share your mindset. Otherwise, you're going to have a very unproductive business. You know, so you need to be okay with someone having a different opinion about how you can get something accomplished. And being able to be okay with that allows for more innovation to happen, and allows for you to challenge each other. And sometimes you need that person challenging you in order to make sure that you're taking the best approach when it comes to the way you're thinking, seeing, and executing on an idea.
If only you can do what your business does, then you'll never grow. You need other people to be able to do what you can do in the business. And so that requires finding them, hiring them, training them, and keeping them. And, you know, one, always try to hire people who are smarter than you. Yeah, because, one, it's more interesting to be around them, right? You know, and then two, like, they'll challenge you some and hopefully grow. And they might move on because they might get other opportunities, but they'll make you better along the way. Quentin referenced this when he was talking. Most businesses are about execution. They're not about having the best idea. It's about who can execute it the best. that's not just delivering it and selling it or making a product or food or whatever it is, but it's about being able to profitably execute over and over and over again, consistently high, you know, great quality, and putting in a system in place that not only you can do it, but your employees can do it, requires a lot of leadership and training and support to get there, because there are people who make better products who don't do well because they're so focused on the product being awesome that they forget they actually need to get it to the customer.
Thank you. Thank you all. questions? Ideas? Statements?
I had a question. So you were saying that others need to be able to do what you do. But what if your business is really just what you do? It's like you offering your service, mm-hmm. but you're not really trying to build an agency. I mean, you really just...
If it's a one-person business.
Yeah. Yeah, like you do what you do, and you just want to be able to not do it for free always.
then it's just a matter of, you know, you have to, it has to be done well enough that, you know, people want to, you know, pay you what you need to make for it, you know. And so, yes, that, if, when we're talking about, and I guess it's also the distinction between just building a business can be one person, a company is more than, you know, one person. If you want to actually grow a company, you're going to need a lot more leadership that's about other people. There's personal leadership and effectiveness and things like that that come into when it's just you. But even then, you want to outsource your website and ongoing maintenance of it. You want to outsource yes. the accounting. You still want those same principles of leadership around
yes,
those
I do.
People.
I was just thinking about having to have people that do what you do mm-hmm. in order for you to
hear. Yeah. As long... But in a one-person business, if that's your goal, is great, you know, and just know what you need to make and what you want to do with it. If you're the only one who can ever do it, you will limit your ability to grow. And if you're okay with that, then you're good, if that's a part of your goals. If you're not okay with it, or if you want to grow past a certain point, you only can put so many hours into the business every week, even if it's 60 or 70. It's probably not healthy to do that for that long, so... whatever it is, and you know how much you can charge per hour for whatever it is, so that's the maximum you can make. If that works for you, or if even not hitting all of that still works for you and meets your goals, yeah, and so forth, you're great. But growing beyond that is going to require helping other people deliver it.
So what about like the online, like say you teach classes, mm-hmm. but instead of always having to teach it in person, mm-hmm. you actually have it in advance so that, you know, you have recorded it and then it can sell it.
Mm-hmm.
You
absolutely.
Know, you have, like, several people. Yeah.
No, you can get some more income and so forth mm-hmm. from leveraging it, so it's not just based on your time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
I wanted to loop back around about understanding your own risk tolerance. So I've identified mine as, like, extremely low. it's like, what? We talked about this, right? I just, like, can't, I don't have enough tools and information to rationalize that. But what is, from you all's experience, like, what's the minimum amount of risk you need to be willing to accept to start, let's say, a general business? And is it possible to grow your risk tolerance? Is it necessary to grow your risk tolerance? At what point would you need to expand it to be successful?
I would start with those last two questions. So, yeah. To expand your risk tolerance, and is it possible?
You know,
we'll talk about that.
If you're not willing to take some risk, growing a business is incredibly hard.
Yeah.
You know, we do a workshop, a two-hour workshop, that's how to start a business, and we first start with, are you cut out to be an entrepreneur? First, don't let anyone ever tell you you're not cut out. You make that decision, not anyone else. But there are a number of things that, like, if you say, I don't like risk ever, if you say, I don't like taking responsibility for things, if you say, you know, I want other people to make decisions, the more of those, I can go down a longer list, you're not cut out to be an entrepreneur. But that's you making that decision, and don't let others do it. On risk, you know, it's the only way to build risk tolerance is to take risk and, you know, and be comfortable with what happens, right? Take small risk. A risk is buying a bunch of ingredients to make something and then turning around and try to sell it. The risk was just buying the ingredients mm-hmm. and the time, right? Over time, you could take a much more risk because I want to build a kitchen. That's a much bigger risk. Or buy a food truck, right? That's a big risk. And so you can try to take smaller ones, and that's a great way to test the business, as Holly referenced in her point earlier. You want to start a restaurant, start catering and or a food truck. It's much smaller risk. And every business has a lower version that you can kind of take and see if it works and see how you feel about it. But if you're just never like risk, then you're always going to be uncomfortable in the business. So that should be an important part.
One of the things to your question about can you grow your risk tolerance, absolutely. You could absolutely grow your risk tolerance. So I think to put to Stephen's point is understand where you are first. And then that's going to let you know how much growing you have to do in order to really get to where you want to go. And again, you know, it really does come back to goals as well. Because if you know you have a low risk tolerance, then maybe your goal is never to leave your 9-to-5, but you have a small business that brings you in some additional income. And that's fine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But if you want to figure out how do you go about growing your tolerance, then there's ways that you can do that. I chose to use my career as a way to grow my risk tolerance, to do it safely without putting myself into a financial bind. And then I even took the leap of putting myself into a financial bind. So for me, I use my career to say, okay, I'm going to take this job that requires me to be able to do this successfully in order to get paid. So at first I started with a job that where it was only 50% of my salary. But if I did really, really good, I could make more than just that 50%. I could get way above that. And so I wanted to know what that felt like, but I didn't want to do it with my own money. I wanted to play with somebody else's money. I mean, that's what the bottom line of it was, is I wanted to play with somebody else's money and not my own money.
Don't we all?
Exactly. I mean, you know, it was still risk from what I was going to bring home in my paycheck, but it wasn't a risk of outlaid all of this financial capital that could potentially bankrupt me. And then I moved from that into doing commission-only sales, which means I didn't get a paycheck at all unless I had the ability to sell. And that was very scary. And so another book that I would suggest is called The Greatest Salesman. It's a very small book, and I highly suggest it for anybody that ever has to go. And we all, to Quentin's point, we all have to sell something, including ourselves. But it's a great book to kind of help you understand what you're feeling in that moment when you're out there trying to sell something. And then I scaled back. You know, I said, you know, that's too much. I don't like the commission only. And then I came back to, let me start smaller again and say, I'll start a small business while I'm working a full-time job. I like that. And then it was, okay, now I can step away again. So there's ebbs and flows, and you can test your limits, just like with anything else. I mean, you can test your limits, you know, and don't be afraid to do that if that's what you ultimately would like to do, if you want to develop that within yourself. There's always ways to do it. I'm just a firm believer in, hey, you can use your career to do that.
Yes, sir.
There's a talk coming up or a piece about funding and grants and things for existing businesses that want to scale.
Ooh, nice alley-oop. Nice alley-oop. Yes, because that is one of the most important challenges that minority businesses face in this community and communities all across America is funding. It's not only all entrepreneurs. But funding and access to it is one of the most critical barriers that budding entrepreneurs face. However, we have a group of people here who have recognized and identified that problem, and as entrepreneurial minds that work in nonprofit sectors are working on solutions. So we'll start with economic development.
All right. So I get the question a lot about grants for for-profit businesses, and unfortunately there aren't a lot of grants available to for-profit businesses regardless of the business's ownership. So, like, there aren't a lot of grants out there if you're a minority or if you're a woman or if you're low income or whatever the case is. As a result of that and because of that, our office does offer two grant programs. Well, actually, two for business development. It's called the ACE Grant Program, Advancing Charlottesville Entrepreneurs. So the first part of that is for existing business owners who have been in business more than 6 months. They can get a grant up to $1,500 for things that will enhance or increase their revenues. So that could be something like a website. Absolutely. I was thinking of you earlier on. It could be something like a piece of equipment. It could be something like more inventory. So anything that will help you increase your revenue. We've also added to that, because there aren't a lot of grant opportunities for startups either, a startup grant up to $500 for business for businesses that have been in business for 1 day to 6 months. So that's an option as well. In addition to that, we have our Business Equity Fund Loan Program. That is a loan program, but it's a low interest rate loan, and so it's up to 3%. That's a partnership, and that's a, you know, that's an interest rate that you won't see at a bank. We can loan up to $25,000, and it's a partnership that we have with CIC. So you would come and visit us first. We'd go through the criteria to make sure that you meet our minimum criteria at the city of Charlottesville, and then we would forward you on to Stephen at CIC so that we can do the loan application. And we have issued thus far
97,000.
We're almost getting ready to go up a little bit on that one, but almost $100,000 in loans given out since March of this year. So we have more money on the table. Our city council is extremely supportive of it. So I feel like it's something that we're going to have here for quite some time.
How many years do you have to pay that one back, or is it all different?
It's variable. It depends. But you can touch on that when you talk about your loan, but it's variable based on the term. But we also have a grant program for individuals who own a business and are going to hire people. So if you are going to hire someone who is a city resident at a self-sufficient wage, which it's based on industry, but we put that somewhere around $13 to $15 an hour, we can give you a grant that will subsidize that wage for up to a certain amount, which is usually about $1,600 to $2,000per new person that you hire. So some businesses have hired, you know, five or six people with that. So multiply that, you know, 1,600 by five or six, and it can be pretty impactful to your business. So you can hire someone and bring them on, they're usually a liability the first few months because they don't know your business and they need to be trained up. And so you can bring them on and we'll help subsidize that training period.
Is that for 1 year?
It's up to not forever, unfortunately. It's whenever you expend the agreed upon, amount. So individual, if we set it at 1,600, it's whenever you cap out that amount, and it's usually about 2 months. And then you can always come back later, like a year from now, and you hire someone else new, right? Then you can come back again. Right. So it depends on how many people you hire. And we don't have any limitations on numbers or years or things like that. We also, if you are a city business and you want to train up your workforce, so let's say you already have two people and you want to train them in things like sales, or you want to send them to an AutoCAD training class, or you want to send them to do in-house web design or whatever it is, we can pay for that training. So that's a significant burden off of the business owner, and we've given some companies up to $10,000 for training their existing staff.
Do you give it up front, or do they have to be reimbursed?
So it depends. It depends on the vendor. So, like, let's say it's a course that you want your employee to go through at PVCC, we can just pay PVCC on your behalf. If it's something like very niche special, we might have to have you pay and then reimburse. But it kind of varies there. It depends on the situation. So we have tried to find workarounds for some of the major areas where we see that small businesses can have deficits. So that's some of the programming that we offer. Did I miss
anything? What is a city business? I mean, like, when you say city of Charlottesville, does the business have to be in the city?
City business license.
Okay.
And that can include a peddler's license. So, like, let's say you make a product, right, and you sell it at a craft show or, like, a market, and you have a peddler's license, that does count. So, and then when I say see an individual, like a startup, so someone starting a business, that would be, you know, a city resident. So you would just have to show residence in the city. One thing I did forget, we are starting a program called Go Startup, and that's for people who want to start a business. If you're a city or county resident in this case, and you go through 6 weeks of training, and then as a result of that, you get $1,500 towards starting your business. So that's kind of like a startup grant, but you just go through a shorter period of training, and then we see it as a precursor to CS. So those are some options we have.
And so other loan options. So CIC does microloans of up to $35,000. To be eligible for our loan program, you either need to be a graduate of our workshop, you know, 16-week program, or have been in business for 6 months. So you cannot go through a workshop, and if you've been in business for 6 months, and when we say in business for 6 months, we mean you've been selling for 6 months. You can bring in financial information showing records of your sales and expenses and so forth for that time, and then apply, you know, for the loan. The terms on our loans range, so a $5,000 loan is probably a 1 or 2 year repayment, whereas a $35,000 is probably 5 years, and that's the longest we go. And so our interest rates, the highest they would be is 9.75%, and they go down to 6.75%. Basically, if you've been a graduate of our workshop, it would be you get a 2 percentage point discount. If you bring a qualified co-signer, someone who's willing to go in and guarantee the loan with you, a family member or someone else, you can get down to 6.75. If you qualify for the city's business equity fund, that 9.75 goes down to 3. And if you were a graduate of our workshop and brought a co-signer, it could be as low as 0 in those cases. We haven't done a 0 yet. We've done a 1 and a 3%. So our loans are designed to solve a problem. It's not just I need money in my business. It's I'm growing and I need a piece of equipment that'll allow me to produce more, or I need inventory, or I need to upgrade my packaging, which lowers my unit cost, or those types of things. We are rarely ever going to do a loan that's about marketing. We might include a little bit of money in your loan. That's a bigger loan that's for marketing, but marketing is an expense you pay 1 month, and you shouldn't have to. It shouldn't take you a year to pay off an expense that you only get the benefit for a month. And so we're looking for the bigger investment that helps you scale your business, take the next step. Maybe it is helping you get the first few months of an employee, or build out a location, or, you know, down payment on a location if you're actually buying property as opposed to renting. Those are the types of things that our loans are for. On the grants piece, there aren't a lot of business grants out there unless you're in really niche industries. The city has some great things for kind of newer, smaller businesses. If reimbursing is an issue, like you get a $1,000 or $1,500 City ACE grant, and you don't have $1,500 to put out for the small piece of equipment or whatever, we've actually done bridge loans, zero interest, where we make the purchase for you, and we get paid back by the city. So it's basically your grant, it's just you don't have to put out the money. Mm-hmm.
So where do you guys get your funding as a nonprofit? Is it city and state, a little bit of federal money? How do you get money to...
Yeah. So part of my job is fundraising. We're fortunate to have strong support from the city of Charlottesville as well as Albemarle County. Our operating support, about 10% of our funds comes from earned revenue, so interest on the loans or tuition on our workshop, but only about 10%. Local and state governments, about 15%. A lot of corporate support, so area banks support us because we're growing the economic pie, which means if you're in business, that's another good piece of advice for everyone, you should be operating with a bank account, and that bank account should be separate from your personal bank account, just as another tip for you. Don't commingle your funds. They're your money. It's all your money, but take all your business money in, make your business expenses, pay yourself into the personal account, and then pay your personal bills. That'll make your life easier when you seek a loan.
Yeah.
we can hit more on that later, but just whenever I always try to refer to, because a lot of times getting to approval and loan sometimes is because we can't tell what's the business and what's the person. But back on your question, corporate support, okay, and then private fund individuals, you know, is well over 50% who want to see more folks in the community be successful and want to help on the kind of growing entrepreneurial ecosystem and what we do. So our loans are an option to a lot of you. If you've been in business 6 months and you're trying to grow and you're hitting an issue, come talk to us. A couple of the tips I mentioned, the bank accounts, you know, like we can help you work through that, you know, but like start keeping them separate earlier. Run your money through your bank account. We couldn't approve a loan for an ice cream business in the region a couple of years ago. He said he needed $20,000. He wanted to expand his shop. He had 70% of his sales were cash sales, and so he only didn't report all of his income on his taxes. And so if we looked at what he reported on his taxes, it looked like he didn't make much money. If we looked at what he said he made, but we couldn't prove because of the cash sales, it looked like he didn't need any more money. So good records are really important. You help get your records in line and so forth. And then if you're thinking about loans or growing your business in the future, check out your personal credit now, both whether it's a loan through us or ultimately a bank loan in the future. Look at the credit, what's on there. Number one rule, if you've had tough times in the past, from this point forward, if you're not already, make on-time payments every month for any debt that you have. Even if it's the minimum payment, ideally it's more than the minimum, make on-time payments, because if I can look at your credit history and say you've had horrible credit for whatever reasons, your fault, not your fault, doesn't matter. If I can see in the last 12 months you've made on-time payments on any debts that you have, I'm going to consider the rest of this loan with you. If I look at, and in the last 12 months you have 3 open accounts, a credit card and a student loan or a medical debt or something like that, and you haven't touched it, I'm probably not even going to look at your loan. You know, like, that's a lot. You could have had horrible history 12 months ago, or 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, or had a bankruptcy, or never had any credit at all. But in the last 12 months, if it looks like you just keep digging a hole and you're not even trying, you know, and if it just looks that way, and I know there's tons of personal challenges out there, and we'll work with them. And if anything, we'll help you work on it, but we'll do the loan in 6 months or a year from now after we've helped you a little bit as opposed to now. So advice, if you're working on the business, start looking at your personal finances, your credit, get those in order. New Hill Development has a great program there that can help you. There's a lot of places that can help you in the community, but work on that. And then look at your personal budget too. We look at your personal finances. Every dollar you need to spend in your personal budget to live and pay yourself from the business is a dollar not kept in the business to help it grow. So, and the big challenge is when you start to get some success is lifestyle inflation, right? I'm successful. Okay, I'm going to go out to eat once a week now. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, and we all want to do it and we deserve it when you're working hard and having some success. But try to contain it so that you can keep that low and give you more of a chance to grow and give you a better chance at loans and other options to grow. Figure out, okay, I'm going to reward myself in this way, but don't just let it grow unchecked.
In the back, on the table in the back, there are some brochures.
On the little counter now.
Oh, on the counter now. there are some brochures for New Hill Development Corporation. We do have a gentleman by the name of Bernard Woodset, who is our financial coach that works with individuals at no charge to the individual to work with them on their financial plan. And so for every individual in that room, that may mean something different. For some people, it is about, I need to improve my credit. For other people, they may have good credit, but they don't have a good plan in place in order to make sure that, one, they keep the credit good, and that they are reducing debt and increasing savings. For others, it's a matter of just kind of, hey, I want to check in with someone to make sure that the plan that I've got is working, and do I need to do something else? We are happy to offer that service. Again, it's complimentary. Stephen has an excellent point, and that's one of the reasons why we focus on that in our organization, because it can be that thing that holds you back from getting the capital resources that you need for building your business, expanding your business, if that's your desire. And how much you pay on that money that you are borrowing, and whether or not the larger banks are going to consider, even if you don't have assets, if you can have good credit, well, then that's gonna help you, and that's going to go a long way. And so our organization can certainly help you with putting that plan in place. And, of course, we are a new CDC. And so as we continue to grow, we will work to, you know, gain access to resources that do allow for a few more grants out there for-profit businesses, because there we do have partners that work in other areas that do make those types of grants. We don't at this time, but we will in the future. But for now, what we can offer is we can offer the opportunity for individuals that are really wanting to make sure that they've got a good financial plan in place for themselves. And then, you know, let us sit down and work with you to make sure that that is something that is on point for you.
And I'll just add that we do have the Bank One of Greater Charlottesville program as part of the Downtown Job Center, and that also offers the financial literacy. We have a staff person who can sit down and do one-on-one budgeting with you. It also has a microloan component to it. So the loan is issued through Virginia National Bank with a 9% interest rate, and we are very lenient on the criteria. So we know that this is an opportunity for an individual who has traditionally been unbanked or underbanked to get a loan, and then we can start having regular payment histories, and that can be reported to your credit report. And so it's really an opportunity for a new chance at traditional banking. Oh, and we also have connections with Fountain Fund, which it offers another microloan as well for individuals with reentry backgrounds. And they focus also on individuals who want to start businesses and want to contribute to their business or grow their careers and things like that. So there's loan opportunities available there as well.
For all of these, if you come talk to any of us, we'll help you find the ones
right.
that, you know, could
Makes
be
sense.
Opportunities
mm-hmm.
for you.
Mm-hmm.
Critical resources at the table right here. Very critical. And the last part of this conversation, please don't miss how critical it is for your aspirations. Sometimes credit and bank accounts and all that stuff can seem overwhelming, but there are people here that can help walk you through that without judgment, and people that are cool that you can be vulnerable around. That's another important component. It's kind of hard to be vulnerable with someone when it comes. Finance is a very personal subject matter, but if you're not willing to face it and be vulnerable with someone that's there, their job is to help you, then you're going to create a barrier for yourself. I'll share with you some vulnerability, personal vulnerability, so that you know that I'm not just talking gas. Stephen mentioned about showing cash, you know, bank account. Make sure that you also, well, consider creating a separate account for sales tax when you start generating revenue. It's so easy to count sales and use tax as your money. That ain't your money. Everybody say
it. Meals tax. Don't forget meals tax.
And meals tax. Repeat. That ain't your money. Everybody say it with me.
And it adds up.
That ain't your money. You can really, really get yourself in trouble if you're counting sales tax, sales and meals tax when you're out selling. That money belongs to the government, and it's so easy to count it. The other thing, so I got in trouble. I got in trouble with that many years ago, back when I had Charlottesville Players. I used to count that money along with all the other revenues that were in the bank. Another thing is when I was really flush with cash, I didn't all keep it in the bank because I wanted to avoid paying tax. But the illogical result of it is that I created a barrier for me having access to getting a loan. So I think Stephen made a point towards that as well. So really want you to make sure that you're grasping that point. I got another question. I think you all have actually, you may have caught, it may be your answer, but just for the sake of the crowd, I think you guys may want to know this. You may. I could be wrong. But I'm going to ask it anyway. We have, it's 10 to 8. You guys enjoying the discussion?
Yes.
Very good. Very good. All right. It's often said that more than half of new businesses fail during the first year. According to the Small Business Association, this isn't necessarily true. The SBA states that only 30% of new businesses fail during the first 2 years of being open, 50% during the first 5 years, and 66% during the first 10 years. So my question to the panel is, from your experience, what is a critically fundamental item many budding entrepreneurs must address in the beginning or during the startup phase of their business, if you all haven't already covered that?
I think we've already covered it to some degree when we're talking about our own financial, you know, histories. Because as a startup, basically that's what any banking institution is going to be looking at, the individual's financial state. Because the business has no history of sales. Like, you know, Stephen was saying, 6 months of sales, not just 6 months of holding a business license, which we've been having conversations about. So making sure that that is in place and in a good place so that you can be have a solid foundation for when you are ready to take out a loan. And then I would also say related to that is making sure you have enough capital to actually start up. Because a lot of reasons that businesses will fail is because they didn't have enough capital to begin with. And so at a minimum, you want at least 3 months of all costs associated with your business covered from the get-go. So that means if you were to open your doors and not have one single sale, you would be able to cover all expenditures, all costs related to operating your business for 3 full months. So a lot of people just don't start with that. They go, and this is something that we see all the time, they go and they sign a lease, right? And they come to me with a signed lease, and they're like, okay, I need money now. You know, I need money for, and this, I mean, I'm not kidding. This happens a lot. I mean, on a regular and consistent basis. And that really scares me when I see it because, you know, you've already started by signing a lease for a $3,000 a month space and you haven't accounted for, you know, any of the other expenses, you know, related to operating your business. So those are the two things. And they're both finance related, I would think.
Know your costs.
Yes, exactly.
I would say to build off of that, not only for the 3 months for your business, 3 months for yourself personally, so that you have some room to breathe, so that you can focus on the business. If you are struggling, if your business is not making money right out of the gate, and oftentimes businesses are not making money right out of the gate because you have all your startup costs, and if you don't have the proper budget in place, you may not be seeing a profit. Right away. And so, you know, one of our good friend Glenn over at Virginia National Bank always asks the question, how you going to live?
Mm-hmm. How you live?
How you living? You know, you want to start a business. That's great. How are you going to live while that business is going? And Stephen made the point earlier about, you know, inflating your lifestyle as more money comes in. You're going to have to look down the road. You're going to have to account for that there's going to be times where your business may take a dip. And depending on the type of market that you're in, you know, or the sector that you're in, your business is in, you know, when the market crashed, you know, for some people, that was a very, very, very critical time. Others may not have even felt it because the sector that they were in wasn't hurt by it as much. But for some others, it was life and death, you know, and how were they going to get through that? And so the market is going to crash. It's going to crash, and there's going to be things that are going to go wrong. What is your contingency for that? Do you have a way to pivot in your business
so that when that situation comes along, you can pivot to some other way to bring in additional revenues until you can work your way and see your way through that. And then don't be afraid to utilize your resources. There are so many people out here that really, really, really have a passion for helping. And oftentimes people, their pride gets in the way because they felt like they should have been successful right out of the gate. And so therefore they're not willing to be vulnerable and share the mistakes that they've made coming out of the gate. It's okay. Everybody that's been in business has made a bunch of mistakes. People who work jobs have made a bunch of mistakes. And it's okay that, you know, we didn't get it right 100% of the time right out of the gate, or even 5 or 6 years into it. But just be willing to understand what are those resources that are available and then access them. And make sure that you do it before it gets mission critical. I mean, before you're like, you know, it's beyond solvable. If you can do it early on, if you can go and seek out that resource when you start to notice that things are not necessarily going the way that you hoped that they would, then that's when someone can find it easier to help you work and navigate through that moment and get you back onto your plan. But if you wait too long, then sometimes that becomes very insurmountable.
Just two reinforcing points. One, know your numbers. You know, a lot of folks are intimidated by numbers and totally get that. But know in your business, how much did you sell last month? What were your expenses last month? How much of those expenses was paying yourself? Like, know them. You know, and if you can come into my office and know that out of the gate, you're going to build a lot of confidence really fast. It makes it easier if you have an accounting system or accountant or someone who can help you do it. But when it's just you to start, do it yourself and know it. You know, a lot of you intuitively know you're okay, but you're not. But you may not actually track it or can actually say it. Get in the habit of saying it. How much did I sell this week? What were my expenses? Just build that habit of doing it. If you need help building that habit, come talk to us. And then with knowing your numbers, I want everyone to repeat this in your head over and over and write it down. Mm-hmm. Revenue is not profit.
That's true.
Revenue is not profit. Write that down. So many people think because I sold $10,000 last month that I made $10,000. No. Whatever the clothes in Quentin's store cost them $3,000 or $4,000, the rent was $3,000 or $4,000, all of a sudden there's only $1,000 left. That's the profit. So it might take you $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 to make $3,000 or $4,000 in profit. That's not unusual. That's a business. Revenue is not profit. And if you ever, and just because money's coming in, because like Quentin said, you have taxes to pay. If you're paying employees, you're taking money out of their paycheck, payroll taxes, we all see it, right? Your employer is taking it out. It's in your account, but you owe it to the government.
Yeah.
So, like, that's not yet profit either, even though there's money in your account. So, over and over, revenue is not profit, and know your numbers so that you know how you're doing. And that's why businesses don't make it the first year.
Thank you. Thank you guys for driving that point in. Guys, I just want you all to know, I want to make this statement that it's important that you all know that business is one of those sole sources of wealth building. Nonetheless, you've heard some admonishments, but don't let that scare you. Just know that if you don't take heed to it, you won't build wealth through business. But it's very important for us all to know, you know, we love business. We understand what it does, what it can do for our lives. We can employ people in our communities. We can create a future for our families. And we can contribute to the economic growth of our communities, which has a multiplier effect, and it improves the quality of life in the cities and the counties and the places where we live. So we want you to really take the things that have been said and say, well, I can't do that. But just know that in order to make it successful, you have to do it right. If you're not going to do it right, then don't do it. One of the biggest lessons that I learned in my experience, I started off, I told you all about my childhood and growing up as an entrepreneur. And during that time, I was a producer. But when I got to a certain point of my success level with Charlottesville Players, with my clothing store, at a certain point, I became more of a consumer. So as a successful entrepreneur, you have to always make sure that you are a producer more than you are a consumer. Because if you consume more than you produce, guess what's going to happen? So somebody just mentioned it as well. Another important point for you to do as a business owner is make sure that you learn and understand your financial statements. Maybe Stephen, you mentioned about keeping good books. Financial statements are very important. There's three top financial statements that you need to start learning how to understand, because when you read them, they'll tell you things. They'll speak to you as a business owner. It's your balance sheet. It basically is a snapshot of where your business is at any given moment. It shows you what are the assets that you have in the business, short-term and long-term assets, cash, this, that, and the other, and the liabilities, how much is owed to people that needs to go out the door. You have your profit and loss statement, which is where you will see the revenue. But if you look at the top line and say, well, yeah, baby, we just did $100,000 this month. But you're not looking at the bottom part of that report that says all the expenses, and where you are at negative $10,000, then you know that you're not, something that needs to be done. There's some decisions that need to be made in your business as the manager of your business. And then the final one is the cash flow statement. And that really shows the inflows of money and the outflows of money. So three statements. Please, as budding entrepreneurs and as existing entrepreneurs, learn how to read those statements, because the numbers talk to you and the numbers guide you. All right. So, yeah, we really, really appreciate your time, your intuitives and your questions. Won't you guys give the panel a round of applause? I think they've done a fantastic job. We really hope that you all have been inspired, been encouraged, and been informed.
It was a lot of really great information about successfully starting a business.
It was. I'm glad to have that event. Mm-hmm. So we'll be sure to link to information about the speakers in our show notes. This podcast is made possible through generous support from the Friends of the Library. If you'd like to learn more or join the Friends, please head to their website at jmrlfriends.org.
Please hit subscribe wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast. If you have books that you'd like us to read and discuss, or topics that you'd like to hear on a future episode, please email us at podcast@jmrl.org.
That's all for us today, but we'll be back in 2 weeks with another recording from a library event. Thanks for tuning in, and we're glad to be
on the same page.